It's funny, the word renunciation always has a hard sound to it that people don't like. You know, it's like people say, I should accept everything, but they don't realize accepting everything means you're letting go of it. You know, you're not accepting it if you want it to go this way and not that way. The only way you can accept something fully is actually if it doesn't, however it unfolds. That's what acceptance is, meaning you can't be holding on to something. And here's this quote. Like somebody once asked the well-known Indian spiritual teacher, what is renunciation? He replied, renunciation is giving up any sense of self. And for that, do you have to give up all your possessions, give up all that you own? The teacher responded, above all, you have to give up the owner. And that is kind of one of the things that about training is that it's actually, you know, it's not the possession that's the problem. It's the fact that you own the possession, that it's you. You know, it's not the car that's the problem. It's the fact that you care about the car in the sense that if something happens to it, you know, this is my car, my house, my stuff. And, you know, and the whole point of training is really the teaching of the Buddha is so amazingly simple. Suffering's simply due to us clinging to stuff, to our desires, to the fact that we want things this way and not that way. Simple as that. You don't suffer when you don't care about something. You suffer when you know I want this and not that. You know, and sometimes it's obvious I want to be healthy, not ill. I want, you know, my money to increase in the stock market, not decrease. And naturally we always have preferences and desires for things to be a certain way. If you're hungry, you want to eat. You know, you clean, you want things to come look better than when you started, whatever it is. But the problem in Buddhism isn't the preferences. The problem is clinging to the preference. You'll always have preferences. I mean, I don't want my car to get damaged. That's obvious. On the other hand, when I am in an accident, which unfortunately has happened, my car's been hit about 4 times in the last couple of years. It's like I feel like I should do an invocation for removal of disasters whenever I park it. Sometimes it's been hit parked in front of the, you know, I mean, it's been hit, you know, where I'm not even driving it, you know, and it's, you know, it's been rear-ended, you know, and other things where it's like, okay, I can't do much more than kind of, you know, I can't blame myself. I parked it in the wrong spot in front of the priory. On the other hand, it's your response to when something happens, that it doesn't have to be suffering. It just is, oh, I would prefer this didn't happen, but it's not a problem in the real sense. And we don't have to own the conditions that pass through us. And that's the whole point of Buddhist training. You actually don't own your feelings, your body, you know. You don't own your history. It's all just conditions that are passing through. And that's the whole point of Buddhism, is that you have to give up ownership of the things. And if you don't, you'll obviously suffer when things invariably don't go the way that you want them to. And that's part of life, is you can't control conditions. So frequently we get the conditions that make us happy, you know, that give us what we want. But then frequently we're going to have the conditions that we don't. And it's why in Buddhism, the 4 divine messengers are old age, disease, death. And then what points to liberation? A monk who's pointing to liberation only because when the Buddha saw it, he saw there's an alternative to just clinging to things, to saying, this is what I want, this is what I need, this is what I require. And all you have to do is think, what do you require to be happy? And the less required, the more freedom you're going to have. And the world's full of people who the littlest things can disturb them deeply. And that's just a sign they're not doing well spiritually. You know, and the less you have, and it's like, I always like the line of, The famous Theravadan master Ajahn Chah had a line, let go a little, have a little peace. Let go a lot, have a lot of peace. Let go completely, have complete peace. Really very simple, you know. So I remember giving it in a class and somebody gave me a t-shirt with it. You know, that the center that in his tradition made t-shirts with it, and I thought, instead of counseling people, I could just give them the t-shirt.
I could use a t-shirt.
Thinking that all this stuff is me, in a way, is one of the things you're trying to let go of as a Buddhist. You know, these are just changeable conditions. You think when you're angry, is it you? No, it's just actually you're having a condition of anger. When it goes, who are you? Are you the angry person? Actually, you're not. It's just at moments you're angry, at moments you're scared, at moments you're happy. Are you a happy person? Well, actually, at times you're not. You know, somebody will tell me, oh, I'm this type of person. Well, actually, at times you're not. you know, very kind person, but actually, at times you're not. I was doing a retreat here yesterday, and we usually do a reading for it. I was doing a reading from Pema Chodron, and they had a nice thing where she kind of mentioned the fact that, you know, one of the things that always got to her was people who were kind of abusive to children, you know, as somebody who was a mother, always very critical and judgmental of it. And then she remembers just having her two small children, like when they were like 2 and 4, and they're just kind of having a temper tantrum, you know, they're behaving dreadfully, and she just said she wanted to throttle them. You know, she just, you know, this impulse, and she didn't do anything, but she said, suddenly I understood how people could be really hard on their kids, because it's there in her and in all of us, you know, hate, you know, selfishness, hate, all these things exist in all of us, but and we can realize they exist in others, and they're not the problem. The problem is seeing, instead of wondering who we are, you know, even spiritually, how you're doing is not that helpful a question. You know, what's helpful is, what do you need to do? What is good, right action right now? What is right view? How do you do the Eightfold Path where you are right now? You know, that's actually very helpful. You know, it's like, that's training. You know, you do it one step in front of the other. Where you are on the path doesn't matter that much. What matters is you taking the next step, you know, and getting somewhere. Because in the end, you know, if you follow the Dharma, it'll take you to where your heart wants to go. It'll take you to more freedom, less suffering. You know, it's like, instead of wondering, how do I let go of all this stuff I'm carrying? And we all carry a lot of stuff, our past, our desires, our wants, our successes, our failures, you know, we're even carrying what are good qualities. But we want to kind of let it all go and just be where we are and have faith it's enough to try to let go of where we are, be content where we are, find freedom where we are, because nothing's actually binding us right now. You're all sitting in this room, you know, if you're being bound, it's just a condition that you're holding on to. Or a condition that you just have to let pass. You know, just like in meditation, you know, sometimes you sit there and you feel like, I can't take this anymore. And you, if you take ownership of it, you'll feel like something's going wrong. Who am I? All the rest. Well, if you just kind of accept that, I feel like I'm about to explode, and I actually know I won't. And that if I keep meditating, it'll actually pass. And another condition will arise. I might feel good, I might feel bad. But these are just conditions. But the very act of being willing to accept the conditions is going to lead you to peace and lead you to freedom. While the simple Dharma is. All the attempts not to accept what conditions flow through you is going to create more conditions of suffering and more conditions that are a problem. You know, just like somebody who obsesses on everything is creating conditions that are going to create suffering. Yeah?
This is something that was mentioned at a Dharma talk that I had with Reverend Master Mado, was that there had been a study about the impulse of anger, and this was particularly useful to me because I tend to have a problem with anger, resentment, and hard feelings. And this study indicated that the impulse of anger, the chemical reaction that results from the initial impulse of anger, lasts only 30 seconds unless you feed it.
Yeah. And it's an important fact that from the point of view of Buddhist training, you do not control the conditions that will flow into you. You know, you don't control, for instance, you never control how you feel. You control only your response to the feeling, which is what the thing is. Like, the fact that something really bothers me is not something I can't say, wow, I shouldn't be bothered by, or irritated, or afraid, or whatever the response is to what arises. Because
be bothered by a very short interval of time.
The whole thing is that how do we respond to it? You know, it's like if a common thing I can remember recently talking to somebody who is saying, how do I deal with my strong aversion to certain, you know, conditions in her life? And I said, well, part of it is don't justify them. Trust that there isn't a problem with those conditions. Stop the whole mental way we cling to something by complaining about it or saying this is wrong or this, why is it not this, not that? You know, it's like the famous Zen line from one of the earliest Zen teachers, you know, who, you know, kind of faith in the heart, in which one of the first lines is, the way is easy for those who do not pick and choose. And the more you pick and choose, not in the sense that you don't, on a practical level, pick and choose. That's like life. It's like you go into a restaurant and you have to order something. You know, so you're picking something. But it's like, I can remember there was a monk, very good monk, but she kind of very sweetly told me, when I go to a restaurant, it's really hard for me to decide what to get. And I said, well, it's very easy to decide what you get when you don't care what you get. The problem is you care too much about what you get, and then it becomes, and we've probably all experienced that, if you think about that, it's as simple as that. If it matters to you a lot what you get, then it actually becomes a hard decision. And there's decisions that you want to give a lot of thought to. I can make, I even have a principle often when I want to buy something or do something, I'll let it just wait for a while, just because I find, give it a little time, make sure after a day or two of being with this decision that it feels right. At least if it's enough money, you know, significant enough, let it just be there. But it's not, but on the other hand, it's fine if it goes, you know, if it's the wrong thing or something, I have to just, it's okay. I made a mistake, you learn from it, but you're not bound by it. And the whole trick is what do we do when we encounter something or a feeling comes up? Feelings always come up, and we don't control what we like, what we don't like, what we do, what we don't do. The point of training is that we keep pointing ourselves back to really the enlightened feelings that point us to the truth and away from, like, I don't like this. You know, the right view. What's in front of, the person in front of me is a Buddha. You know, let me bow to this Buddha. Well, that kind of reorients, you know. It's like a line I always like using, because Reverend Master Jiyu, my job at the Shasta Abbey used to be to greet whoever showed up happened to pop up at the gate. And one of the lines she always liked saying, and she'd said it all the time to me, to Pete, you know, as a teaching, is whoever shows up at the gate is a Buddha. Your job is to bow to the Buddha. However, if it's a drunk Buddha, you don't let them in. You know, you still have to choose, is this right action? You know, so if it's somebody who is, you know, it's not good to let in the monastery, I don't let them in the monastery. But they're still a Buddha. It's just, at the moment, they're drunk or they're evangelical Buddha, you know, which we had, you know, who's trying to, you know, which would show up at the gate, you know, which is from a Buddhist point of view, which Christians wouldn't like to hear, just a deluded Buddha.
You know. I like showing up at a Christian church as a Buddhist and trying to talk the priest out of believing what he believes.
We give a bad name.
Well, that's actually, and that would be considered an un-Buddhist activity to do. Exactly. It's why you don't, you know, in fact, to try to proselytize is considered un-Buddhist to do. You're never trying to convince people. In fact, I was just talking to somebody on the phone who was in a very rough situation with some relatives of her, and one of them is very disrespectful to her being a Buddhist. And she's explaining to me how she's trying to convince him, you know, how reasonable she is. And I told her, drop it. All you just tell him, he has to be polite and respectful. He doesn't have to like what you're doing. He doesn't have to understand what you're doing. Just tell him to be, and don't put up with him not being respectful. That's all that you have to do. You don't have to have him understand Buddhism or understand where you're coming from. That might not be possible. And plus, it's not really... The thing is, you know, he just has to learn to be, if he wants to be around you, he has to be polite, you know, treat you respectfully. And, you know, and when he's not around, if he wants to complain about what you're doing, that's his right. You know, you can't, it's not your problem if he wants to think you're an idiot for being a Buddhist.
It kind of reminds me of how I would tell my children to, you know, do a chore like vacuum the carpet or clean their rooms or wash the dishes, and they would tell me they didn't want to. And I would tell them, well, that's okay, honey, you don't have to want to.
And actually a lot of, to maintain a real practice only happens when we do what we don't want to be doing. Because if we always wanted to be doing, there's no effort. You know, the effort is the fact that you're doing things, if you're going to maintain a practice, and really that very word discipline, it requires you to do it when you don't feel like doing it. You know, so nobody who has a real meditation practice is meditating only when they feel like meditating. You know, you're meditating often when, God, I'd rather not, meditate. You know, you're showing gratitude even though you don't feel grateful. You know, you're being willing even though, God, I don't want to do this. So this is what's good to do here. And that's training, which is bringing things, kind of treating everything like a Buddha, even though you're not experiencing it as a Buddha. If you're experiencing it as a Buddha, there's nothing involved. You know, it's like being grateful when you're grateful. There's no effort being grateful when you're grateful. The effort is being grateful when you're not grateful. It's like being thankful for that gift that you don't want. That's an effort.
Well, I'm going to say I'm grateful that my transmission went out as I was driving through town. It's been great.
Well, it's what's, you know, there's a nice, one of the lines I always found helpful as a Buddhist monk is they were, you know, one of the, again, the Buddha followed the normal Indian practice of going out and just living on what people gave him, which is the, you know, tradition that, you know, of India that exists today, you know, even today where you'll see somebody shave their head, go out and they're a renunciate and they'll live on what's given. And you go with a bowl, traditionally, and people just put stuff in it. And an example of Buddhist training, they say, you have to bow to whatever is placed in your bowl, whatever it is. And then that becomes your life, whatever conditions you encounter. This is your teaching, and this is what you're being given, even if it's ill health or somebody, you know, being difficult. This is what's being placed in your begging bowl. This is what you're being given, whether you like it or not. And if you can bow to it and use it as okay, these are conditions that with, when I view it from the point of view of Buddhist training, I can convert these conditions into something positive, you know, because it is positive when you really, whatever you're being given has its positive aspect. Even, and I'll have people very frequently have ill health or some problem, and when they viewed it from the point of view of training, they'll be actually, wow, I'm actually grateful for, now when I look back at my cancer, it was actually not a bad thing. I'm grateful for the fact that things didn't go the way that I wanted them to. And when you use it as training, you know, there's something positive going on, no matter what it is, you know, or one of the quotes I like using is somebody in a concentration camp who said, the greatest joy you can find is that there's a joy that fills everything that no condition can possibly affect or alter. Mm-hmm. You know, that's real liberation when you realize no condition really affects it. You know, and that's what the Buddha found under the Bodhi tree. You know, and that's where freedom comes, because we never control the conditions. And obviously, somebody in a concentration camp is in about, you know, pretty dreadful conditions. But on the other hand, I've been around people physically in dreadful, you know, about as dreadful a condition as you can be, you know, in intense pain. And, you know, they've told me, you know, they're dying in intense pain. And they'll mention to me, this is actually the best I've ever felt in my life.
Wow.
You know, they're, you know, being really sincere, and, you know, and you can look at their face and they're full of joy. And, you know, I remember the person who said that to me, I remember she said, she just feels a little regret that she waited till now. You know, she's about to die. And in a way, what she did is let go of conditions, you know, just let go of what's happening to her, and realize nothing's, you know, nothing's binding you. It's, you know, and it's the way things go. You know, and it's, and that's why when our, the inner renunciation is giving up, in a way, even possessing our thoughts, feelings, emotions, ownership of them. And realizing, you know, they keep changing. The thought isn't you because you have different thoughts. The feelings aren't you because they keep changing. You hate somebody one day and you love them the next, you know, which is the real thing. So you don't have to, and in a way we're trying not to just see it. It's just a thought, just a feeling. And in a way, when we train, it doesn't have to be our thought, just thoughts or feelings, no different really than everyone else's thoughts or feelings. And in a way, we're not judging them as the owner of them. It's like somebody's angry. Rather than thinking of them as an angry person, you realize you're just experiencing a condition of anger. And actually, maybe they're doing conditions that cultivate the anger, but that's still just a temporary condition. They maybe as, you know, just like, I like using the example, I've been around people who are irritable and hard to deal with virtually anybody, but they're amazing with their dog. You know, they're this kind, compassionate, accepting. It's like no matter what the dog does, they're willing to accept it and be kind of great with their dog or cat or something. And you think, well, they're not an angry person with their dog. They just have trouble with humans. you know, so they're in a way where they're not an angry, you know, they have that tendency, and we all have tendencies, but we don't have to possess the tendencies. Right now, like when you meditate, it doesn't matter what the tendencies are, you let go of them. And in daily life, you keep letting go of those tendencies and just bringing yourself back. What is good, you know, to the Eightfold Path? What is right view? How do I view this in a way that the Buddha would have viewed it? You know, what's the view of the Dharma of what's going on? This person's angry in front of me, or this person is being selfish or being whatever it is, rather than viewing, wow, this isn't, I don't want this, or this is wrong, and this isn't just, this isn't fair, this isn't reasonable. When it's whatever it is, it's what humans do a lot of the time. You know, it's like, wow, people are angry, people are scared, people are selfish. All we have to do is look at ourselves. Those conditions arise in us all the time. You know, it's like, wow, Kinray has a selfish thought. Yes. You know, or Kinray doesn't like this condition. Yes, that comes up all the time. You know, it's not infrequent. It's just how quickly can I let go of it? Just like somebody, I remember I always like quoting, you know, ask the Dalai Lama, you get angry. He says, oh, yes. I just try to let go of it as quickly as I can. Mm-hmm. You know, which is training. You know, yeah.
I heard on the radio a few days ago about Lance Armstrong and, you know, his giving up his titles. And the comment was, well, I wonder how Lance is going to like being a bicycle messenger after all of his fake wins, that there's nothing much for him to do now. But they were saying that, well, he has given up his titles.
In America, he's so famous that you'll always find a way to make money off your celebrity.
I think he's suffering much less now.
Oh.
He's probably been holding that with a lot of pain for a long time.
Yeah, it's... Anyway, it's good for people to accept, you know, kind of like he was in a world where everybody was, you know, somebody said, you know, it was absurd, you know, nobody could compete in those races who, you know, wasn't on, you know, you just weren't, it was just a completely unlevel playing field, because if you were just being honest, you weren't going to be a world-class cyclist, because the difference is enormous. Just like, you know, I remember
all the front runners were doing what? All the front runners were doing the blood doping.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, almost everybody in the, it was an unfortunate sport, and it's amazing, you know, those drugs have a huge impact. So just like I remember being in this area wondering how Barry Bonds suddenly in his late 30s became the best baseball player of all time. Nobody's ever done that before, you know. And it's like, okay, you know, it's like he was a very good ball player, but late 30s you get worse, not suddenly become way better. And you realize how much impact those drugs can have when it can be that dramatic that you can go from being, and it's hard, you know, it's like, you know, some, you know, I kind of think, you know, when I heard some of those stories of somebody taking those illegal drugs and, you know, they, you know, made, you know, then signed a contract for $150 million, and you think, that is motivation to break the rules. I mean, I'm not surprised. Wow, people are tempted to break the rules when you can set up your great-grandchildren to be financially secure. You know, everybody who you care about is taken care of, if you wish. But... you know, it's, you know, and the, a lot of things are seeing what our intention is, what are we trying to do, because that actually sets up whether it's a selfish act or an act of training, you know, an act of, that has a positive, that's actually part of the path, or just, we're just trying to get by, or, you know, and, when that's, you know, and it's, you know, and we have to kind of understand the destructive nature of a lot of the things that we can do if we don't let go of them. A good example is anger. You know, and anger is really quite simple. When you're angry, all that it means is you're not getting what you want. Simple as that. You know, we come up with all these things, but basically you're getting conditions that you don't want. Either not getting what you want, or getting what you don't want. You know, And it's as simple as that. You know, we come up with all these things like, how do I deal with anger? How do I, you know, why am I angry? It's, you know, to bring it back to the, okay, this is just desire. And sometimes we don't realize we've structured our lives around certain desires, like people should be a certain way. Despite the fact we've lived in a world where nobody's this way yet. You know, just like I'll be as somebody who's been practicing, you know, kind of been a practicing Buddhism for a long time. People will often describe how people should be who are practicing, like, you know, and I kind of go, have you ever, seriously, people will kind of think, oh, you shouldn't be getting angry. I say, okay, give me that person you've met, encountered, who never gets angry. I've never met this being. I've never even heard of this being. You know, even the Buddha got annoyed at things. You know, there's places in the scripture where the Buddha just says, I don't want to put up with, like, you know, there's a description in the scriptures I always like where the Buddha just starts complaining that his assistants just aren't listening to him. He wants him to do this. No, you should do that. And he finally says, and you kind of think, you know, there's the Buddha who's actually, they said, his greatest virtue, that he was the best example, always was patience, which is, in Buddhism, is a great virtue, because without it, we can't really convert all these impulses and everything else. Like, there's a nice book in the library, actually, by the Dalai Lama, which is, you know, converting anger. And it's about patience. You know, the whole chapter's on patience as that which converts anger. So we first have to put up with the first step of converting karma, converting anger or fear or anything, is just putting up with stuff. We can't convert anything. You know, it's like, how do I convert my relationship with this person who I'm angry with? Well, first of all, you have to put up with them. You can't convert it, if, you know, like, I'll convert it when they're in California and I'm in New York. And we get a break of 10 years. You know, you have to convert it by putting up with it, if it's good to put up with it. You know, it's not like everything has to be put up with. You know, patience doesn't mean you have to endure every condition. You only endure them if it's good to endure. You know, if it's going to bring a positive result. You know, just to be around somebody angry for no purpose, that doesn't have a purpose, isn't patience. That's just, you know, why are you doing it? You know, just like the person who was telling me about the person who was critical of them being a Buddhist. I said, why be around them? I wouldn't put up with it. You know, and that's not, unless there's a positive reason you need to, you know, if you really need to be around them, okay, then you have to put up with it. But if it's at all optional, why be around somebody who's being disrespectful to you? You know, gave a case where I had a relative who was being rude to me, being a Buddhist. And I just told them, you know, just, you have to be respectful to me, or else I don't really want to see you. And the person didn't want to see me, so they learned to bite their tongue. And I could sometimes see them, in a way, biting their tongue. I won't say anything. You know, I'm not going to comment on this. And in a way, you can see that one way of looking at the self is that it's kind of a structure that we're trying to control what happens. You know, we wish we could control ourselves, which we're not very good at, but we're also trying to control the circumstances, experiences, and what we encounter. And it actually doesn't work that well, you know, because we don't control things. And without training, it ends up our mind and heart keep getting caught up in things, keep wanting stuff that we want to control. Like, I want this. I want this praise from this person. I want to be treated this way. You know, I find it upsetting. You know, just like, you know, giving the example I've been using. Somebody thinks you're an idiot for being a Buddhist. Why do you care? Yeah. Why are you taking their opinion into your heart and making a problem out of it? So they don't, you know there's plenty of people in the world who don't think this is a good thing to be doing. Why are you, are you going to really pay attention to, why pay attention to it? Why take that into your heart? You know, why do you care what their opinion is?
My experience with this stuff is the ability in this process to be able at the same time to do two things that are not quite, for instance, to not be in control on one hand, but on the other hand, understand that I have to do something if it is some kind of a teaching or something, I need to change something maybe. So constantly there is in charge or not in charge.
Well,
yes, you know, this, the same being able to be at that place where it constantly changes.
Well, in a way, you are in what you're trying by training. You're trying to be in charge of your response to what's unfolding at the moment. I mean, somebody's angry with me. I'm not in charge. I'm not even in charge of how much I find it a problem. You know, what I'm in charge is, okay, what can I do now? Do I have to make it a big problem? Can I just let it go? Can I say something, back, just like an example I like giving just because it worked so well. So I thought, oh, that was right. The right response of somebody blowing up at me and being really critical of me, who barely knew me, but she was really upset with me, and she went through this whole long kind of thing of of like how awful I am and all these things. And I kind of looked at her at the end and I realized I don't need to defend myself, this is useless. I said, okay, I'm a mess, why are you upset? I mean, what difference does it make how I'm doing? Why are you being all furious about how I am? And she looked at me like, oh. And then I was one of the few people who could get along because the person wasn't too together. But, because in a way, it was useless. I could defend myself because she was, all the rest and feel defensive or hurt. It had an impact upon me. I remember I, kind of left, after dealing with her, I kind of went to somebody and said, kind of feeling kind of like, bad from being attacked. But on the other hand, I realized there was no use in responding to, it's not going to help her and for me to get all defensive and start arguing with her. No, I'm a good person. And trying to explain to her, instead of being proud and arrogant, I usually feel inadequate.
She said you were proud and arrogant?
Yeah, and at the time I was mostly feeling inadequate. So
well, those two kind of go hand in hand.
But I don't think I was usually, I don't think anything I do was, particularly just the way you can perceive things. And to her, this was kind of at Shasta Abbey when I was guest master. So I had a lot of authority and I was in charge of things. So it's very hard, easy to project all this stuff just on the role and the position. Just like, and it's amazing how much, just like there's that psychological thing of just having, putting some people in charge and some people not, how much you fall, into the roles. I've done it with college students, and it's amazing how much they just, by play acting, like being in charge and prisoners, people immediately actually start behaving in ways and relating to each other, even though they both know they're playing in a way a game. It actually, when they do it with people, it has a real impact upon it. So just being in a role does it. It just, I'm pretty sure in the role I, wasn't particularly, I had a fair awareness that, of my role. And I was actually at the time very junior at the monastery, so I wasn't, in any venerable position, despite her thinking it was. I wasn't. You know, nobody else in the monastery was looking at me that way. Because at the time, you know, there were tons of people who, you know, would be, you know, would be the ones who would be used, if anything, you know, to do any serious teaching or anything. You know, I just happened to have that role. But, you know, but a lot of things, the untrained mind and heart kind of just gets caught up in its wants and keeps going after this impulse of wanting, of needing, of requiring. And it's actually the reason this the world's a mess. Is that the world's full of people, you know, pursuing their, you know, obsessively pursuing their wants. In fact, it's kind of, you know, it's like a credit card. I remember a few years back, I love the campaign. Take the waiting out of wanting.
You are my
niece. And I thought, you know, you know, and this is America. This is, you know, it's like, this is what our whole culture, I even kind of smiled. It's an American response. After 9/11, one of the things they told you to do was to spend more money to keep the economy going. It's like, you know, people have to go out and spend so we don't, you know, have a recession due to the fact that people stop.
And then they're concerned that we're not saving enough.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like, you know, you can't have both, you know. You know, and you realize, you know, actually, if nobody's saving money and everyone's spending money, and that's what's needed for the economy to go, aren't we artificially living beyond our means, which is often what we're doing in our society without anyone wanting to wreck, you know, you never read this in political discourses or anything else, but essentially everything is us basically living beyond our means. And that sounds so un-American, you know, like, you know, that's almost like what you're supposed to do is live beyond your means.
It's the same as taking steroids.
Yeah. And in a way we're doing it as a society. It's what the budget deficits are about and all the rest. It's, you know, and the funny thing is when I look politically, every Western every democratic country almost in the world is living beyond its means. You know, it's almost a universal aspect of people having to, of people being able to choose what the government spends. Almost everybody's willing to spend more than they have, and we'll worry about the future, you know, down the road, but I want this or I don't want more taxes and all the rest. And it's actually universal. Every society virtually in the world is when they actually add up long-term liabilities and pension, you know, retirement and all the rest. Everyone's living beyond their means because politically it's very hard. You know, most people just don't want to want stuff and they don't want to pay taxes. I want to pay less taxes and have more stuff. You know, and it's, and we can all understand that. It seems perfectly logical that you want to do it, and it's just somebody is supposed to look on the long term and kind of go what it is. It's just the wanting, and it's you know, but it's the nice thing about Buddhism is all these wants and desires in a way are just visitors. They're not us. When we identify with our wants, they become us, but actually, you know, just like going to Lance Armstrong, truthfully, if you ever let go of all this stuff, did a full, you know, did all he could to make it right, he would probably, I'm sure, be much happier than he's ever been in his life. You know, and he'll make a living, you know, he'll, you know, kind of, they'll, you know, there'll be a place for him, in fact, you know. Hell, he could probably make a living as a motivational speaker then of how to make you know, kind of fall apart and pull yourself back together. You know what I mean? And we would like somebody like that if he really wholeheartedly, you know, did it, which from the news reports I read, it sounds like, you know, he's still kind of guarded in his acceptance of responsibility.
Maybe the doping helped him beat cancer, too, you know.
It could have been. You know, you never know what the steroids, you know, all those, whatever he was doing, you know, what its impact is on the body. Nobody really has studied any of that stuff other than it has weird effects on the body, but who knows. But the main thing is that and a lot of training is that we don't have to understand why all these things, all our problems, everything arises. There's a value to it, but in the Western culture, you know, we're so psychological. Why do I have this fear? Why do I have this desire? Why do I have this thing? And there's a place. I mean, it's nice, you know, it can be helpful to know some of that stuff. It's not like we're ignoring it completely. But the really important thing is that none of it is binding. You can learn to be free, you know, just like of whatever it is. You don't have to carry around your past. You don't have to understand what's there. You can just start letting things go, you know, just like you don't have to understand, you know, why you have difficulty with your mother. Just try to love her. You know, just try to have sympathy for whatever she went through, compassion for her. And you don't have to know everything about why she was the way that she was or what happened to you exactly. You can just start letting it go. Just have compassion for whatever's there. And just bring yourself back that there's no problem right now. It's like, nothing my mother did affects is here right now. Why am I carrying this around with me? And in a way, we're learning to keep the real training, which of letting go. It's like, the nice thing about renunciation is everyone often finds it hard to want to let go of all these desires and stuff. But everybody wants to let go of their worries, their fears, the rest of it. And remember, you're also renouncing all your fears, all the anger, all the stuff that you don't want anyway, because it's a package. They come together. You know, as it said in that scripture this morning, a box all with its lid. You know, what you want comes along with the fear and the anger of not getting what you want. You know, so you let go of both, because it is a package. You know, you let go of, you know, like somebody who's trying to be something. You know, just like, it's like, you know, there's Lance Armstrong where he becomes a good example. Suddenly he's this figure that's world famous, envied, I'm sure, you know, all these things, you know, rich and this whole thing. And, you know, then now you're Lance Armstrong who suddenly you're going to have to get criticized and, you know, people are going to look down at you and you're going to have to look at the news media where everyone's ripping you apart. The two come together, you know, well, I can think, nobody cares about me. You know? I don't have to worry about, wow, what's the media think of me? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I'm kind of irrelevant. So, you know, all of that. And of course that has its, you know, if you don't care about the thing, but if you care about it, you have to accept the reverse. That suddenly, instead of being a hero, you're a villain. And, you know, he's now getting a lot of media, making him this awful villain.
It's a long fall.
Yeah. And he did some, you know, stuff that, some unenlightened actions fairly safely, because it wasn't just taking the drugs. He treated people apparently poorly, and you know, so a lot of people feel really hurt by his behavior, his what he did, is from the reports in the news. So, you know, that's kind of depressing to read that everybody thinks you're an awful person, not just a cheater, but you know, kind of somebody who really treated people badly. And that's, you know, and truthfully, you know, that was part of the thing. If he wanted to stay on top, he had to keep everyone else in line from, like, talking about all that he did. You know, so you're kind of trapped in this thing, as criminals often do, you know. You know, they get trapped in a in it, and then get a cynical view of the world where everybody's like that. You know, you had to cheat, you had to be bad, you had to be corrupt. You know, everybody's out for themselves. You know, when you look at the world and all you see is selfishness. Anyway, it's probably about time to stop any less. Okay, nice everybody could be here.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Reverend. Thank you.